sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. I am back in the studio. We'll see for how long today. We've got the full regular Wednesday crowd here in the studio. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us as we get underway here. 9 days away from kickoff for Auburn football against Baylor in Waco.
Bill, it's good to have you back in the studio. It's
good to be back in here.
I get the first day.
Yeah, we missed you. First day. Bill, off the IL, although he's been contributing to the show from home.
Yeah, I've only been able. I mean, the only places I have been has been to physical therapy. I mean, it's been from the hospital to the house to physical therapy
and back.
So this is the first outing and. Hopefully I can make it through 2 hours. But, yeah, it's good to be back. I've really missed having the opportunity of, the media opportunities that we've had. Now, they're done for this week. But you guys got a pretty lengthy one again yesterday.
We did. It was fun. We got to see some good stuff yesterday once again. I thought the best spirited red zone passing situation that we've probably seen, where it was the offense had some big ones and the defense responded, then the offense responded. I thought there was a lot of back and forth in that that we saw. And it's really interesting because people, it's been ridiculous that people made a big deal out of Hugh Freeze throwing his visor but he is invested in coaching the quarterbacks up, and I think it's been really good to see. And it's not just Jackson Arnold. It's like he got on Ashton Daniels yesterday. I mean, he is involved.
I considered it an overreaction to think that Hugh Freeze getting after Perry Thompson a week ago or getting after Jackson and throwing the visor. If you use that to sort of assume anything larger about how things are going to go this year, felt like an overreaction. I do keep coming back to Hugh Freeze's comments about the offensive line from Monday. How much of that is Hugh Freeze trying to motivate with a more public call out of a position than we've really had this preseason? And how much of it is, genuine concern out of what kind of results you're going to get out of a group where you really haven't seen much as far as experimentation with different personnel? It's been the same 5-6 guys this preseason in the first unit.
Yeah,
I would say
they've moved those guys around a little bit though.
We saw
Connor Liu. We saw D Wade at center some yesterday. We've seen a little bit of that
with Too Tall coming into play guard.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because here's the thing: I think it's always difficult to go, hey, it's 3rd and 15. We're going to drop back and throw the football, protect a quarterback. That's usually. So that's been the difficult part has been the drop back game. So that's what he said. Hey, the drop back part of things. I do think some of this, and we'll see. I think there has been a genuine surprise at how good Kieron Crawford has been in the preseason.
Okay.
I think I have talked to a couple of folks.
Yeah, I read some of the things that you guys were writing today about.
Me and Christian did not talk to each other.
Yep.
And Christian talked to someone, and then I talked to someone that was an NFL guy, and he's like, Keldrick Falk and Crawford. I was thinking, well, Jordan Crawford. He goes, no, Kieron Crawford. And I'm like,
I was thinking maybe Jay.
Jay, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's Kieron. Yeah.
And people are like, hey, this guy has tape. I think that's an interesting part of this, too, is that I think there's some of this going.
Crawford's
hey,
got two elite pass rush
I said
type
the same
guys.
Thing. I said
that's going to be a problem for tackles.
The game. If those guys are that.
And I would say, I mean, on top of the other people you could mention in that conversation, I mean, I feel like the Chris Murray buzz has been really positive to the point where, I mean, imagine if Kieron takes that jump forward and steps into McLeod's role and Chris Murray can provide at least what you got from Keyron last year or whatever.
And you still,
and you've still got Jared Smith as an option, and you've still got other players that could.
And you have Amaris Williams on the other side with Keldrick Falk, and y'all is, it the options then become, okay, that's a little different. I
thought you were going to go in a different direction as far as the reason it's tough to grade this offensive line right now is because we don't know how much Jackson's mobility is going to be part of this offense, and that changes what an offensive line can do and how they can look. And I wonder
what a defense does.
And I wonder how how effective was. I mean, we've used the example of Cam Newton at A-Day in 2010, and how you know when you make it a game of one hand touch, it changes drastically. I remember Gus talking about how tough it was to evaluate Nick Marshall.
They went live. He's like, look, he learned from Cam. He's like, we got to know if this guy's what we think he is. And they went live because everybody knew Cam was going to be the quarterback.
Right.
They were just like, hey, what will it be when we see it? They did not know Nick Marshall was going to be the quarterback until they went live. And they went, okay, he's our quarterback. That's it. I think they've seen enough of Jackson running. I mean, obviously against Alabama last year. I do think that is part of this that you cannot, because you're not going live, and people, somebody's going to call in and go, well, why not? Well, nobody does it. Nobody goes live a quarterback.
Auburn's probably gone good on good as much or more than anybody.
I would say as much as I can remember an Auburn team going in quite a while.
You're certainly not going live when you've settled on a starter. Like maybe in a wide open competition early in the preseason, like you said, to figure out if it's Nick Marshall or one of the other options, maybe you consider it.
Yeah.
But a broken collarbone to one of those guys probably isn't worth it.
Especially when you only have three.
I believe it might have been Neil Caudle who, when they, is that the story?
Neil Caudle, broken collarbone.
When they were trying to figure out Brandon's backup in Cody Burns' freshman year.
Yeah,
Neil Caudle got injured in a practice where
seven, maybe.
I believe Brandon was the only non-live quarterback in the practice, and so when they went to the other guys, you could get hit, and Neil took one, and changed the course of.
So I do, I agree. I think that's part of it. And look, I was talking to I went by baseball today and started kind of meeting some of the new guys, some of those guys in town, and of course, their questions are about football. They're asking me about football and doing the things they do, and so you start talking about. What does it look like? Those things. And I said, the difference in football and any other sport you can find is that you cannot scrimmage in football. Now, even in basketball, I talked to basketball because they can hedge you in basketball because they've seen this enough. They know what set you're going to run. But in football, if you know it's going to be a pass, it absolutely changes the way you're playing defense, even though you know you're not supposed to do it. Like, hey, we're going to play this straight up. Well, you know it's a pass. It changes what you do, and you're not. So when you start to plan for an opponent and you get a look and you go, well, we're not running that play against that look. Well, in practice you are because you're just running it.
Hearing Coach Dunn say play the drill, right? Like don't,
that's it.
Yeah, it's not a play the drill, not the don't sort of cheat the.
You're not trying to win that play.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And so I think they've. Yeah, there are a couple of variables that, I mean, try as that, and it's interesting because we thought running back was going to be one of those things, but I thought Coach gave a pretty straightforward answer on Monday as far as what that plan seems like. Although you don't know after Damari and Cobb how close,
and even then I still believe that's a position that in week three. The carries could look different than they do in week one.
I think they could be drastically different.
Yeah.
Oh, we've seen the plan change during week one's. I mean, was it Washington where it's like they had a plan during the first half for a couple of running backs and realized one of those running backs was giving them a better chance to win than the other one. That's the one you saw in the fourth quarter.
And I think that could be the way this one works because here's the thing, Alvin Henderson hasn't got much talk. I'm firmly convinced that if you say, hey, we got to hand the ball to Alvin Henderson to get yards, he can do that. The other parts of the game might be difficult, but I think he can run.
How important are those other parts?
I think that's the separator.
Yeah.
That's what happens, though. That's the separator for those things. And normally the more experienced you are, the better you are. And I think you look at it, Jeremiah Cobb, to me, his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield is going to be a vital part of this thing. Because we heard Hugh Freeze say, look, we were down some receivers the other day. We put them in a slot. They did that last year. That opens up a lot of possibilities to formations and some things you can do where you start having two guys in the backfield at the same time. Maybe you go two back, three wide, and you go, oh, okay, well, now we're going to split that guy out, and we're going four wide with a running back in the slot, and can that gives you a lot of options. I think he's going to be – hey, he said it. He's like, I think he's a breakout guy. That would be big for this team, too, if Jeremiah Cobb becomes that type of guy.
Jason Caldwell with us here in hour number one. It's the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, you can give us a call on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
20th anniversary week for Skybar.
All kinds of anniversaries, it seems like this week.
That's right. We've been talking a lot about 1985 and 2005. And it's amazing, Jason, in the Cam Newton jersey retirement thing that it's the crystal anniversary of the 2010 season. You have 15 years.
Hard to believe it.
And so you get the BCS trophy.
Yeah.
And Cam Newton himself, you know, is one of those, you know, just a what a season. So you can text the show 334-564-1840. Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. I wanted to ask, because you were just talking about Jeremiah Cobb, I had someone ask me how much motion you expect this offense to use. It feels like you would have options as far as weapons, Singleton, Simmons, Jeremiah Cobb potentially as inside guys. Bryce Kane has had a pretty good couple of days.
His camp's been good. It has.
That's good.
It was urgent.
He needed it.
He did.
He was one of those players where it felt like he had a very important – in late July, you said these next couple of weeks are really important as far as how his Auburn career is going to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think to me it reminds me a little bit of Omar Mapson, where you go, okay, a couple of guys get dinged up. Can you stay on the field and get those reps? And then when you do, what do you do with them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you earn playing time. You think about, hey, are we talking about Bryce Diaz if DeMarcus Riddick isn't in a yellow jersey for a couple of weeks? We may not be.
Probably now, not.
He's been pretty good, though.
But, yeah, he wouldn't have had as many opportunities.
That's it. So you go, hey, can you take advantage of that? And you look up, and that guy's on four special teams and is going to play on defense. I mean, we've seen him mix in with that first and second group some. Yeah, can you take advantage of those? Bryce Kane has done that. You mentioned two guys to me. When I think about Malcolm Simmons and Eric Singleton, Malcolm Simmons has been a running back in high school. Eric Singleton obviously can run, can make people miss. Jeremiah Cobb. Those are three guys that you feel like put those guys on the field and you might be able to move them a lot of different places, and that puts a lot of stress on a defense. So I do think there's a lot of potential movement, maybe not in motion, maybe just movement in general where, okay, hey, this he may line up here this time. Because I think it was the key last year for me. It was the key for Cam Coleman's finish to the season, was that it was the first time he was able to line up somewhere other than on the left side of the formation. All of a sudden you're like, okay, he can move around now. That's where you create matchup issues.
We'll get to our first break. Love to hear from you. I want to get Jason's thoughts, and I'm pretty sure we know what they are. But I mean, it's been a big news week. You mentioned you mentioned Cam Newton, and we got some other news as well with Auburn adding national championships. We'll get Jason's thoughts on that. Love to get yours. Again, 334-321-1390. We're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. Love for you to join in. Well, I had missed one of the news items in the time from when we left the house. I didn't check my phone and was just now able to log back in and check. Auburn announcing an expanded partnership with Yellowwood to honor Coach Dye there on the field.
Yes. You know, and it's going to be, you know, part of not only Yellowwood branding, honoring Coach Dye. There's going to be a Yellowwood, you know, painted thing on the field under Pat Dye Field.
Right.
But this is absolutely another step in an NIL direction. Like, this will be used, like, the photo that you have has, you know, Keldrick Falk, Jackson Arnold, Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton in there. Wouldn't be surprised if all of those guys have some kind of partnership with Yellowwood right. now. That's how this thing has to work. These are the types of deals that have to happen. That, hey, you're going to talk about legally, not, you know, giving money for nothing. These are legitimate deals. Yep. This is how it works. Nike, I think there'll be some of that stuff that happens.
Oh, yeah.
With Nike.
I mean, there was another email earlier today about Nike, you know, the NIL apparel is now available.
Correct.
And I remember hearing post-settlement, there were different press releases from schools that announced that they were opting in, and they talked about whether it was the number of alumni who run prominent corporations or the fact that if you're in a metropolitan area with a lot of corporate headquarters, you know, in the vicinity, like these could be really important factors in the NIL space in the industry, and you're seeing one of those partnerships now with Auburn and Yellowwood. And it's, I think in general, like taking the NIL aspect of it out of it, but like, it's cool that Pat Dye Field is going to say,
yeah, that's
Pat Dye Field, right?
Like, I mean, that's something that, yeah, a lot of folks hadn't thought about, or folks may not have realized it because you don't hear it all the time because it hasn't had that branding on the field.
Yeah, no, and here's the thing. Like, of course, people are going to complain. There's nothing to complain about. This is the world we live in now. It's part of it.
Then it's going to say Pat Dye Field with a Yellowwood logo.
Yeah, probably, yeah, right, like underneath it. It's Pat Dye Field above it, Yellowwood logo, and it's just a like a rectangle. It's the world we live in.
If that's what it takes to get it to say Pat Dye Field, though, you know what I mean?
Well, and, like, here's the other part. If, you know, if that's what it takes for people, like, hey, you want to complain about recruiting? You know what it takes to get recruiting? More money. You know what how you get more money? You sell branding on the field. That these things all connect. And mm-hmm. so, like, you have – South Carolina's already done it. South Carolina's got a tractor supply company or whoever. I'm going to guess most everybody's going to do something like this before it's over with. Some of them already. Hey, Kentucky sells their stadium rights. Like, they play in Kroger Field,
right,
and they play at Kentucky Proud Park. I mean, like, I don't think Auburn's doing that. This is the next step in doing that.
Right.
And, hey, you get to baseball and put Yellowwood on the wall in left field. Sell it. I mean, like, you're going to do something like that.
Does it Tennessee? Isn't it Thompson Bowling? But like Food City,
correct,
or something?
Food City.
Yeah, like there's a.
Yeah,
they have a corporate,
yes,
sponsorship,
correct,
on it too.
This is the next step because it's now, it is costing you money to do these things. You have to make more money.
You better know how to make money to
absolutely
be able to keep up.
All the revenue streams will sort of be, you know, and I do think there's a middle ground where I don't necessarily want the college football field looking like a NASCAR
minor league ballpark.
Or I was going to say a NASCAR driver's suit.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can go with a minor league.
I mean,
the fence at the.
Well, and that's my thing. It's like, yeah, like
fence.
Little league field there where you sell, like, yeah, hey, we're proud of Jimmy, and you put his picture on the wall and sell. Yeah, I don't think we'll get to that point. But I mean, we've already seen it. Like, there's signs on the walls in the stadium. Hey, hot dog advertisements in the stadium. I'm like, It's already here. I mean, it's been here for a while. This is just the next step.
Yep. Before we get to the phones, Jason, quickly wanted to just get your thoughts on the claiming the four,
yeah,
additional national titles.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, and to me it's seven because, like, you know, the other – there were five.
Yeah, there were three that were just like in the media guy.
But they weren't – really, yeah, they're not in the stadium. They're
right,
not – to me, they're not if they weren't in the stadium, then I'm not counting them. So they were 57 in 2010, yep, were in the stadium. There's seven more. So there you're nine. I think it's absolutely the right move. There's,
yeah,
no downside at all. Most everybody has done this at one point or another in their athletic departments. Auburn did it, didn't make a big deal out of it, did not put out a press release. Got wind of it. I asked for a quote. Got one, and that's it. But they're in the stadium now. They've already put up some signage doing those things. And so, yeah, I don't think there's a downside at all. Somebody bring it up, and when they do, you say, look, with one stroke of the pen, Alabama went from 6 to 12 national championships and went
right.
from the next media guide. It's just it, – there's no downside
at all.
Yeah,
it was Wayne Atchison, wasn't it?
Yeah, downside, yeah. No downside at all. And those – if you had a team that was four that lost four games and finished number 20 in the AP poll, you might go, yeah, these two teams combined to lose – these seven teams combined to lose two games.
Two games. Yeah. Two games lost by those seven.
Yeah, so, I think it's the right move.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, you know, retiring Cam's jersey. The right move. I think it was a great move.
The only point of contention, I know we'll get to Yellowhammer in a sec. The only point of contention I would have is that I do feel like with the 04 team, the fact that they were not national champions is an important part of the story because of the way the postseason went down and the fact that they went 13-0 and were left out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's an important part of the story.
Yeah, that forced the 14 playoff.
Like, and I sort of think like, and that's a perfect season and a championship season. And maybe I was thinking about this in my conversation with Bill yesterday. That might be my favorite team, any sport, any season.
It's tough to go. There's one that's better.
I have a hard time being objective about it. But the only thing is, I sort of liked not claiming a national championship on that season because that's part of the point. Like, that's part of the story. The true story is that that team wasn't national.
You know who does want it?
Sure.
The guys on that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And they earned it.
They're the only ones that matter in this situation.
All right, 334-321-1390, and it's actually Spectre that we have on the phone. Hey, Spectre, man, it's been a while. How you doing?
Hey, Spectre.
Alias Yellowhammer.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. You left me hanging yesterday, Dan.
Sorry, we had Jacob in to talk about the high school football, and I didn't want to cut him short for a caller. I apologize. I apologize publicly to you, Spectre, for not keeping you going.
Yeah,
we had Jacob to start the show yesterday to talk about high school football. That's why I couldn't get right to you.
Well, listen, is that going to Yellowwood? Is that going to be the return of the Yellow Fella?
Well, it's yellow. I don't know.
It's hard to say. Yeah. No,
I could see a Yellow Fella, Cam Coleman, riding in a yellow suit on in a commercial.
I don't know if any of those guys are getting on horses. We'll see.
Jarquez is gone.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. I want to see Jimmy Raines.
I wouldn't be surprised to see a little Yellow Fella return.
Yeah. Well, Jason, let me tell you, I've been saying this for the last 4 or 5 years, maybe six. You know, the game is won in the trenches, right?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
And we're going to find out in less than 10 days what our offensive line is worth. What I hear is that a two-year starter is our number six man. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Either tells me two things, that our offensive line is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, or either that the number six guy is not as good as the guys ahead of him. What do you say about that?
I don't know how the first one would.
Well, keep in mind, the second one.
I don't know how the first one would translate.
Yeah,
to that.
I would think your first option would be this must be a better line if a guy who's been a 2 year starter correct. Isn't able to crack the starting line.
Important context too, Spectre, that with Tuttle, he got that year of eligibility late. Because he's a junior college player, I think they went into the portal and got two tackles, thinking he wasn't coming back.
Or aren't sure if he was going to be back.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's another reason why you would have a 2 year starter who is now maybe your top backup at guard and tackle. But I do think in general this is like seems like the best starting five Hugh Freeze has had.
Since he
got to Auburn.
Correct. And that's the thing. I don't think there's any question. There's no question in my mind. This offensive line is better than it's been the last few years. Is it good enough to be a team that goes out and dominates Alabama, Georgia?
Yes.
I don't know if we'll see. There's no question in my mind this offensive line is better than it's been the last couple of years.
I'm going to be keyed on that left tackle. Now tell me if that left tackle goes down with an ankle sprain or something, who's going to replace
him? That's where Too Tall would be. He's going to be your sixth man probably at both tackle spots.
And both guard spots, maybe.
At least one guard.
Maybe. I think Dylan Senda has come on. I think Dylan Senda is a guy that is getting closer to where you go, maybe that guy's ready to – but I think Too Tall is a guy that you're probably going other than center in a pinch. Like we saw the other day, we saw – like if Connor Lee were to get banged up,
yeah, Dylan Wade goes center, and then Too Tall moves in.
They move Too Tall to right and move Jeremiah Wright to left, and so
and maybe they move in Senda and keep Wade out there.
Yeah, you might. Yeah, but yeah, I do think I'll say this. We mentioned it, and Bill was talking about some notes we put up. I talked to someone the other day, and last year Auburn. The entire season.
Was it Chan Gailey?
No, this is scouts.
From the first day of practice to the last day of the season, Auburn had 92 NFL scouts.
That doesn't sound bad.
As of Monday, there have been 68 already here.
Constantly there.
Most of those guys are coming to look at the offensive line and Keldrick Falk.
Right. Yeah, that means they think There's some players
from a talent standpoint
that they want to see close up. Yep. So that's a good sign, Spector.
Yep. Yeah, yesterday, Dan, you were talking about somebody getting a thigh bruise. And that's what I was going to talk about yesterday. Me and Bill's talked about this before in previous shows, that these guys, especially the receivers and DBs, look like they're wearing coaches' shorts out there. And everybody else started pulling their pants up, pulling their knee pads up around to where their thigh pads used to be. And now they don't even have any pads at all.
Right.
You know, it's an orthopedics dream out there, but they look.
Yeah. Here's the other part of that, too, is that they are not NCAA allowed to practice in full pads on consecutive days. Can't do it.
Well, rules are made to be broken.
Well, they're not. Those rules aren't. I guess you could if you can go cheat and watch games and scout opponents and not get
only
wear disguises.
You could probably wear full pads.
I love that he was wearing disguises. I love that he dressed up as a CMU coach.
Yeah,
Spector, great stuff. Appreciate the phone call,
Jason.
He was talking about Eric there.
Singleton. Yeah. I talked to Marcus Davis for a few minutes yesterday. He said. Thinks he'll be fine. He got a knee to the thigh. Two guys running together. Precaution stuff. I think if they were playing Friday, they would have sped up his process and gotten him ready to go. Right now, they're just taking it easy on him, and it's honestly given some other guys a chance to go out there and get a little more work.
I mean, they've got a few guys that are just sort of dinged up. Is what it appears.
Yeah, I think if you're in the middle of the season. Then you're rolling guys right now. They're like, hey, we'll put Cam Coleman in a yellow jersey for a couple of days. We're good. We know what that guy can do. DeMarcus Riddick, we'll put him in a yellow jersey. We know what he can do. Eric Singleton the same way. So they've done that with it. We've seen Jeremiah Cobb. He's out of it now. But they put him in one probably early in the season. If he'd have been ready to play a game, he probably would have played. And they just taped that finger up and gone on. So
who's it now? Kayan and
Kayan had one on again. I think it's just hey, just make sure these guys are ready.
What's good is when you've got the other guys that are out there working.
Hey, I'm telling you, Rayshon Pleasant had a great day yesterday.
I was so excited when Auburn got him in the portal.
I'll tell you.
I had seen him play, and when I heard he was in the portal, I mean, he's one of those guys that you go, man, it'd be great if we could get this guy, but you just don't think you will because of the situation with Kayan and Jay coming back, and Auburn already had Rayon Strader.
Yeah, Dan will tell you, too, the thing about him is that he's a whole lot more physical. Yep. When you think about corner, you think Walt McFadden, or you think like Carlos Rogers, like even like you know Jay Crawford, Kay and Lee's thick, but you look at Rayshon Pleasant and he looks like a wide receiver.
Well, he was a really good offensive player in high school.
Well, he looks like it,
and you can tell he's built when he's returning kicks and things.
Not David Boston, but
that's a great pull though. David Boston, the biggest receiver as you. Yeah, I was thinking like maybe a bigger Jerod. Right, it was sort of like
bigger Jerod.
Yeah, but I mean, from a stature where you go, like you put it up to 6 foot tall, and you go away like 195, and you go, yeah, he looks like a guy that could play running back.
I thought Pleasant, both when he returns kicks and in coverage, when we got to see practice yesterday, like both.
Oh, he had a good day.
And twice, the ball would be in the air and a defensive back made a really nice play on it. And I go, who? That was Donovan Starr.
The young guys can play now. Starr, yeah. and Woodby. You start thinking about it, and I know we got to get to a break. If you want to get to a break, I can run out. But numbers on defense.
Sure.
You start thinking about the amount of guys that could play.
Hey, when I finally got to putting the depth chart together, it's like,
it's a bunch.
That is really interesting to look at. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive on this Wednesday, 22 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell with us here in hour number one from Auburn Undercover. And, Jason, you were talking about just the numbers there over there, especially on the defensive side.
We're just talking about just interior defensive line alone, you can get to nine. Without any issue, you can get to nine guys that you could see a pathway for a guy to play. When you start talking about Bobby Jamison, Travis, Malik Blockton, Jay Hardy, James Ash, Dallas Walker. So you go, there's five guys right there.
Zeke Walker.
Zykevious Walker, who's the veteran guy at six. And then you got three true freshmen in Malik Autry, Jordan Crawford, Darion Smith.
He hasn't been talked about as much as Malik
would be
and Jordan.
Third down pass rush probably only this season, but he is really talented in that role as super quick, explosive, athletic kind of guy. So I think that's nine guys interior for essentially two spots.
Two spots, that is.
Then you talk about defensive end, and you go, that's the one that is an interesting one to me, because I think Zykevious Walker is probably your third guy. You probably slide, but Darion Smith could slide out there too.
Yeah.
But you start going, you know, obviously Keldrick and Amaris Williams, but you go Darion Smith, Jared Smith in that role, more of a buck linebacker. I don't know, but – you start going to the
buck. He's a guy that could be either side. I mean, but
we've talked about
you would expect either Keldrick or Amaris is going to be on the field.
I would think one of those guys is going to be on the field most all the time.
Yeah,
yes.
Like that's. I mean, you could start getting into the depth.
But we just ran through four positions essentially, and that's probably 15 guys somewhere
there.
Around in there.
And then
two
bucks.
Linebacker spots.
I
think we're talking about. Yeah. You could –
you got Kieron and Chris.
After that, I don't know how it factors. We talked to Jamonta Waller yesterday. He's come on. He's done some things.
I would say just like last
year
with
– Joe Phillips.
With McLeod.
Jared Smith.
Last year,
Falk.
Right. Last year with McLeod and Kieron, one of those two guys was on the field pretty much the entire season.
I think you're right. I think it feels more like one of those two guys with a Jared Smith.
Sure.
Maybe – a rabbit situation where you go third and 12, let's put these guys on the field and turn him loose and see what happens. Linebacker, two spots, six guys. It's six guys.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I think Robert Woodyard, to me, it feels like Woodyard and Riddick would be the first guys on the field.
That's the first two.
Caleb Wheatland, probably the next true middle guy.
Caleb and Xavier, maybe?
And Elijah Melendez, I think, is the other guy there. But Xavier, Bryce Diaz. The good thing about linebacker group is they're pretty interchangeable. You're going to be able to play those guys at different spots.
It's cool when a linebacker who's been grinding for a while gets that opportunity, and it seems like with Robert Woodyard, like this is a dude getting his shot. By the way, did you see that was it Wesley Steiner was signed by an NFL team as a fullback?
Yeah, the Seahawks.
Wow.
Did you see? Yeah, the Seahawks.
Well, good for him.
Like walked through the building last week because he came over and tapped me on the shoulder and was like, hey, how's it going? He's still been working out, I guess, and the availability of going, hey, put me on a plane, I'll come. So I guess they're one of the teams that has a fullback, and so I think they signed him to see what he looked like as a fullback.
Yeah, not a typo, right?
Wow. I had not seen that.
And Gunnar Britton, who had a fantastic UFL season, is getting he's offensive line depth for the Lions.
I do this think year. It's interesting. We've seen some UFL guys starting to
Sal Cannella
to get a little. Well, there's a couple of quarterbacks that just got signed, a couple other players that have been pretty good. Secondary, five spots. 16, 17
Oh, man. I mean,
it
is really tough. That's what I was saying to you during the break. I've got some guys that I got three or four on the depth chart because I can't move them any higher that I feel like there's no problem if they're out there on the field.
We just talked about the freshman corners and obviously Kay and Jay Crawford and then the two transfers, and you go, that's six guys for two corner spots.
Yeah.
The nickel safeties are really interesting because we got to see it again yesterday, but it was – Caleb Harris, Sylvester Smith, Champ Anthony, and every play they were somewhere different.
Any of them could be a nickel or playing one of the safety spots.
This is not old school free safety, strong
safety.
You're
lining up, right.
This is, okay, you're moving. We saw some really interesting defensive alignment.
Well, that's DJ Durkin.
Yes.
When he has players, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, and yeah, but like
unless you're going against him.
Yeah, but you know you got Jaquez Robinson who's come on and done
really
some good things. The two freshmen back there at safeties, Kinsley Faustin as a nickel, I think is going to play a role for this team. I mean,
we were wondering how much Champ, you know, seemed ready for action.
He hopped in there yesterday, didn't he?
And then he got right in there and was making plays.
And hear what else he was doing. He was so vocal yesterday in moving guys around. You see him, and he's one of those guys you didn't really know before he got here, and you got a chance to know him a little bit more, and I got a chance to know him a little bit more this summer. And the guy walks up now, and he's like a light bulb. It's like, boom, that guy light bright. I think Champ Anthony being healthy is going to be a really big deal for this team. Now, he rides a bike a lot just to kind of keep that leg going and keep everything. But, man, he was a spark plug yesterday.
I mean, he rides the bike to the point where I think we were wondering, like, is he going to be
healthy?
Is he going to be all systems go for Baylor? And literally within 10 minutes of wondering about that, he's out there going step for step with Malcolm,
absolutely
on a deep ball and among some other plays he made. I wonder, because of what you just said, I wonder if they like Champ as the last line of defense, as sort of a guy who can see and align people, and also, I mean, you seem to need those skills.
His coverage,
but he can cover. That's the thing.
Either safety spot or the inside.
I think Caleb is, if you say more traditional strong safety,
yeah,
I would say Caleb Harris is more traditional in that role. Such a smart player, but as Sylvester to me is the glue guy. He can cover. He's honestly really good close to the line of scrimmage. But Champ is one of your best cover guys. Mm-hmm. And so you go, maybe say you're playing a team that's three wide and they're going to go, hey, we're going to put our – I think back to those Alabama teams going when they had Mechie and those guys in the slot.
Devontae.
And Auburn was playing a safety as a nickel. And you're like, well, it's over with. You can't do that. Now you have guys I feel like that can match up even if they put their best receiver. That's where those guys become valuable because I think
that's where you have to.
I think Anquan Fagans is a guy that can handle that role and do some stuff too.
You know, I think a lot of people thought that that Newboy was going to be the guy of the freshman to be able to step in. It sounds like Eric Winters has also
guys.
Yeah. They're absolutely different guys.
Bigger physical guy.
You talk about you mentioned the looking like a Pleasant, seeming like a receiver type. Okay, Eric Winters
looks like a linebacker.
If you told me they moved him from running back, like he's a big
or linebacker.
I mean that's a big impressive athlete.
Here's the thing about him, it's in that
there's your Wildcat quarterback right there.
Well, what he is that he's such a good athlete. It has some Carlos Dansby qualities. He's not as long, but he's a really good basketball player.
Oh, yes,
they played him at tight end. They throw him the football, kickoff return. I mean, I saw him return a kickoff for a touchdown last year. Like, and you go, like, that guy weighs 205 pounds as a high school guy doing some of that stuff. And you look and you go, like, there's so much there for him. Newboy is just, I think, but to me, Newboy, and we only got to see a little bit of him, but 1994, Ken Alvis.
Oh, yeah. Long from DeMont.
Made plays.
Okay.
DeMopolis.
Made plays.
Yeah.
Made plays. Like, that's Newboy. You go look at him and you go, well, he's not as impressive physically as that guy. And then the ball snaps.
He's always where the ball is.
And so I think it's a fun defensive group. My question still remains, linebacker group, when you get to the fourth quarter and a team is scheming you, and okay, because they're just not much experience. How do you hold up in those situations, and can you adjust?
I mean, Robert Woodyard has the, you know,
him and Wheatland's played the most football of any of them, but he hadn't been in this defense.
No. Robert at least has been in the
defense.
That's
still my question. Yeah. Going, okay, do you not get out of place?
And Riddick had a really weird offseason, right? Yeah. Because he was battling different ailments.
Yeah, but like last year, basically he was a spy for much of that was much of his role last year. So he hasn't really kind of played that. So that's still my question on defense: is how do those guys respond when the bullets start, mm-hmm. you know, flying, and you got to do those things.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us as we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email TheDrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final segment here of hour number one, our final few minutes with Jason Caldwell. So before we run out of time, JC, I thought it was interesting yesterday to see that we're switching to baseball, that the selection committee is going to now seed 1 through 32 instead of 1 through 16.
Yeah, no, it's something I talked about last year after Coastal Carolina was obviously better.
A little, much better.
And so to me, you can – And I think we'll see this eventually down the road in football too. You can seed 32 teams. It's hard, like in basketball. It should be the number one overall seed should play the worst.
Yeah, you should be as close as you can get to doing that.
Seed or whatever it is you get to.
You can make some adjustments.
Yes, yeah, correct. And but if because you're like they're not going to do it conference versus conference. You'll have to make some adjustments. But if you're the number three national seed, you should not play the number 10 team in the super regional. And so I think they're going to try to match us up as much as possible. I think it's a good move because you can do that. I mean, everybody has RPI. Everything works in RPI. It's not a perfect plan, but I think it's another good step. I agree.
You mentioned stopping by baseball, listening to Butch on Tiger Talk on Monday night. Hey, he seems to be in a pretty good mood here at the start of the semester.
It's interesting to see. You know, just so many new faces, obviously, again. But a lot of these guys I've already talked to, kind of got a chance to meet or do whatever. So I got a chance to see some of the guys today, but see some of the returners and some of these guys. And they're trying out their Nike gear for the first time, getting their cleats and all those things. So, stopped by for a few minutes and saw them. So it was good. But, I think it's a talented team. Returning guys, some key pieces.
Auburn's not going to sneak up on people this year, and I think they'll get a little more respect than they did last year.
No, I think it's going to be a fun team to watch, and should be an interesting one with them to get to go to Texas early again and challenge themselves and get prepared for what you know is going to be a really difficult SEC schedule again.
All right, we've got just a couple of minutes left here in the first hour. Just talk a little bit about what folks would find there at Auburn Undercover as you guys, as obviously preschool workouts are done. We've got classes going on and just a week away from the opening kick.
Yeah, no, a whole lot going on. You're right. Starting to kind of ramp up a little bit towards Baylor, and so kind of held off talking much about them because you kind of want to let them get into camp a little bit to learn a little bit more because, again, like everybody else, they've got 23 or so transfers. So we'll start to gear up a little bit towards Baylor heading into next week, start to kind of put some finishing touches on Auburn's out of camp, you're into school, but you hadn't really gotten to the meat of game planning yet. Mm-hmm. That'll begin some this weekend, and then you get into that next week. So a whole lot going on with that. Big announcement tomorrow is 7:00. Braylon Womack, five-star safety.
Right. That's right.
7:00 tomorrow night. You can watch that on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. Tom Loy is going to be there, national guy. Feel like Auburn's in pretty good shape for one of the top players in the country. You get a guy like that, and I think you're in the mid 30s, probably somewhere around in there. But from an average star ranking, you start to move into the teens,
the top 15 or
yep.
so.
And yeah. so. Another good step in the right direction for them. And I think that this is a recruiting cycle. We said it's going to be a smaller class because there's so many freshmen and sophomores still on this team. But you go out and win early, build some momentum on the field, add a few guys to what you got right now, and once again, you'll have a pretty good class.
Yeah, so, of course, you can keep up with all that there at Auburn Undercover. And then, of course, follow Jason.
Yep, ITAT Jason, YouTube page, my two-minute timeout. Every day you can kind of watch those on our YouTube page as well, so got a ton of stuff going on.
When are you heading out?
Heading out Thursday, so it'll be
next
Thursday morning we'll head out, and then obviously for the Friday night games, so we'll have it next week. Yep.
All right, great. Well, we look forward to that. Again, always appreciate Jason coming in. But we are out of time here in hour number one. Stick with us. We're right back for the second hour of the Wednesday Drive.
Capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Yes, it's good to be back. I've made it through an hour. We'll see if I can go another 50 minutes.
It's getting a little restless, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, the thing is, you're supposed to keep the knee elevated as much as possible, and you know, radio's not usually made for you know, recliners or things.
No,
like
I don't
that.
Know how people. I don't know what people imagine. We're sitting in fairly. We're sitting in ornate thrones.
I mean,
that
this
were
is a really nice studio. It is. So I'm trying to get by with the leg with the leg up on the counter. We'll see. Hopefully, I don't knock anything before we're done. But
yeah, we're still waiting on the Craftmatic that we're going to let Bill sit in for the the adjustable.
Yep. Hey, our thanks to Jason Caldwell. Always great to have JC in the studio with us here in hour number one. And I mean, nobody's going to, you know, have more little bits of information about just anything to do with Auburn sports. And, he talked a good bit, Dan, about what you guys got to see yesterday out there at practice. I really am interested in and wish I could have seen some of the 11-on-11 that was going on yesterday.
Yeah, the stuff that we got to see when they when they had Jackson and sort of tasked him in the offense with getting first downs and trying to convert a red zone opportunity against guys who are going to be playing a lot on the defense. Like, you know, there's some debate among the beat as to how much of that might have been trying to simulate Baylor and how much of that might have been stuff that Auburn's defense is going to try to do this year.
I think it's both.
I think so too. I think it's a little bit of both. Probably more Baylor prep than they've done.
Oh yeah.
In other instances.
But you know, I mean, if it's working, I think DJ Durkin's going, yeah, it can work against other people.
And I know it didn't. This opportunity didn't end with a touchdown. But Auburn's offense moved the ball, got closer in this case. I thought there was the plays that stood out to me in that sequence. There was a big inside run for Damari. There was a third down where Jackson scrambled and found Bryce Kane for a catch and run, for a quick sort of outside. Uh-huh. And there was the play that we talked about earlier. I thought Jackson had a really nice ball, catchable ball.
Oh, the one
probably,
that you said Malcolm.
Probably 30.
Misjudged.
Probably 30 yards in the air. Comes down near inbounds near the goal line, and Malcolm sort of Malcolm lost it in the lights. That's not the right,
lost in the sun.
Yeah, couldn't find it there, and was battling with Champ for it. But considering where it was, like if Malcolm sees the ball,
in other words, it was placed.
I thought
very well.
It was placed where Malcolm could make a play for it, and Malcolm just couldn't get to it. But it was like an impressive moment for Jackson and a near connection on a big play. But no, I thought. I thought there was some really high level competition going on when Auburn Jason mentioned the number of scouts. That's something, especially since I like to gravitate towards the defensive linemen to see if there's a player or two who's been getting more reps, or who's been sometimes you'll hear Von Trell or Rock, say something really, and it's usually like me and like I'll be talking with JG or I'll be talking with Brian or I'll be talking with and it's five or six scouts around us taking notes, and they're taking a lot of notes on Keldrick. He's not the only one over there.
No, this is really good for the rest of the players that are out there to have these scouts there and see if they can do something to catch their eyes. I heard you chatted a little bit with Chan Gailey.
Yeah, well, Jason and I were watching. It was right after the 11 on 11s got done, and Jason and I were watching. Coach Freeze gathers the receivers,
right,
and brings over one of the guests at practice. I knew I'd seen the guy before, but I couldn't quite place it. And Jason is like, I think that's Chan Gailey. And sure enough, it's like, yep, that's exactly where I've seen this guy before. That's George Tech's former Georgia Tech head coach, among many other things in his career.
Oh yeah,
several NFL stops Cowboys, as a head coach. Was a champion, a championship coordinator. Chan Gailey's a very accomplished football coach, and he was there. Talk with Jason for a while. I wandered over, introduced myself. We'd met at the. I went to the 05 game, but I don't think I went to the. I didn't go to the press conference afterwards, so maybe I'd never met Chan Gailey before. I just watched a game
while he was at Tech.
That he had coached. Because he's the coach in 05.
Yeah.
When Tech comes to Auburn and wins the opener, and he is not only was he Patrick Nix's boss when Nix was the offense coordinator at Tech, but he was the head coach when Calvin Johnson was there. I told a story about knowing Calvin Johnson's. High school quarterback, who was a student. We talked for a little while, and I pointed out Cam, and I said, people have made some comparisons there, and he watched for a little while. I said, and he played for Coach Nix at Central Phoenix City. He watched for a little while. He goes, yeah, he's good. So stamp of approval from someone who knows.
Yep, he's seen a few.
Not the easiest coach to impress, I would think. At wide receiver, but he liked what he saw in Cam Coleman.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Chan Gailey with a very impressive career. Played his college football. Played quarterback at Florida.
I was talking with somebody the other day about Kane Womack. Uh-huh. Do you know what Kane Womack did as a college football player? This is a crazy story.
No, I don't.
He was Peyton Hillis's backup at Arkansas.
I did not know that.
Kane Womack was there as he was a Gus Malzahn fullback for Arkansas. In 2006, he left. He finished his career, I want to say Southern Miss, but he left and finished his career somewhere else. But he played first 2 years of his college career as a run blocking fullback for Houston Nutt and Gus Malzahn at Arkansas. Huh, with
I did not know that.
Yeah, I had no idea. But that's and I wonder if he would be a name people talk about.
Yeah, he did finish at Southern Miss.
But I wonder if he would be a name people talk about should things go south at Arkansas this season. A guy with a
because he was a head coach at South.
Head coach
left to take the DC job at Alabama.
Head coach at South, and if the Alabama defense shows promise, I mean he's someone who is
highly, the Alabama defense is expected to show a lot of promise,
right? And I think Kane Womack's in position to go credit for. Now they got a DC they really like at Arkansas. Already, they got
that's true.
They got a guy.
He hasn't been a head coach,
but he's never been a head coach before. But and there's an offensive coordinator at Arkansas who's been a head coach several times.
Yes, he has at Arkansas.
At Arkansas, as a matter of fact. So who knows could be grappling for that job if Sim. I saw that's one of the toughest schedules in
Arkansas.
Arkansas's got they've got one of the toughest schedules in college football this season, and that's going to be that's. Like Sam, wonder if that's gonna if he's gonna be able to keep that whole thing afloat.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, it's gonna be. I mean, we'll see. It's hard to believe we're gonna get through another year without a coaching change.
Hard to believe that. I mean, the fact that you've got all 14 coaches back from the end of last season is. Oh, 16. I gotta get used to saying now in year two of that.
But just the second year, so just it's not that bad.
No, but I would think it would be it'd be nothing short of miraculous for all 16 SEC coaches to to remain in their current positions.
Yeah, you'd have to have some teams that aren't expected to be very good perform better, but that would mean somebody is going to have to, you know, not live up to their expectations.
And you also had the uncertainty last year, right? You had schools thinking, do we want to pay a big buyout right now, not knowing about the settlement, not knowing about revenue sharing and NIL, in an uncertain college football climate, it was probably easier to say, hey, let's wait and see on this coach. Let's not pay a big buyout and hire a brand new coach and invest a ton of money in that and then also have to deal with whatever happens in 2025. Now that it feels like more and more of that is behind us.
It does with I would say.
What is the clearinghouse?
With concerns about, is it going to affect our ability to be able to compensate our players, the players, the way that we would like.
Do you think?
I think that may play into some decisions to not quite pull the trigger yet on some coaches.
If it happens again, if we have another year where schools are really conservative about making coaching changes, I would have to imagine that the financials I would have to imagine that's playing a big role. We'll see if we have another year of schools being conservative in that regard, because that's one of the crazier things about last season in the SEC is that you have all 16 coaches back for another year.
And as we were talking in hour number one, schools have to be as creative as possible, coming up with ways to just bring in more revenue. And you've seen now with the word today that Yellowwood is working with Auburn. I mean, Yellowwood's going to be sponsoring Pat Dye Field. There will be the naming. I mean, you will see the brand Pat Dye Field with Yellowwood at Jordan-Hare Stadium this year. It's been Pat Dye Field for a while. You know, it's been Pat Dye Field at Jordan-Hare Stadium, but you haven't ever seen that. And so that's the type thing that universities will be doing to create extra revenue. I mean, like Jason was saying, I mean, don't expect it to be completely like as you pointed out, you know, NASCAR drivers' uniforms and vehicles.
Or the
but
scene.
We're getting closer.
The scene in Major League, right, where they maybe it's Major League 2, where they go to the ballpark and realize that there are advertisements all over the. All over the back, the fences have been turned. It's like the fence, the back. Someone right. says it looks like the Yellow Pages in the mm-hmm. back. Like you do hope that there's some restraint and there's some acknowledgement of, oh, you want to keep the visual experience. You don't want to clutter it too much with advertisements. And I'll tell you another one: a boxing ring. Now, like a boxing ring is just absolutely covered in branding and logos.
Yeah, you hope the field doesn't start looking like that.
Yeah. One would hope that, you know, that they can find a middle ground between, but I do wonder, and not just at Auburn, all over college. I mean, Jason mentioned it, like Kroger Field. You got Food City. I wonder how many schools are going to be precious about if a corporation wanted to.
Yes, it would be tough at Auburn with Jordan-Hare Stadium, with Pat Dye Field at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I don't know how you'd add something.
Presented by Netflix. Yeah. Like, I don't know how you. Yeah, I don't know exactly what you.
You know, I'm thinking, all right, who are the perfect sponsors for, like, the Red Zone? And things like that. Things that you always hear about. It's the.
Okay, yeah.
You know, those type things I see coming. You know?
Yeah. No, I see what you mean. Yeah, you can find
the what's red? I'm just
Charles Barkley Redmont.
The Redmont. Redmont Red Zone.
Yeah, the Redmont Red Zone. Marlboro Red Zone. Like I don't think that
Marlboro.
I don't know if they're. Yeah, I don't.
They probably love that opportunity. Oh man.
I think you're right. I think we could see some new frontiers in. And honestly, if you don't like it, I would say it's that or more commercials.
That's the other thing. You're right.
Like, and maybe you're going to get more commercials anyway.
You probably,
but
are.
but it's that or even more commercials and sort of marketing and revenue generating opportunities within the stadium. And I do think and Auburn is probably going to use the video screens for more of that too, especially now that you've built.
I would sure think so.
Especially now that you've built the second one. So
another giant that's there on the north end.
Hey, although the face mask singer has become, I think, one of the more popular.
Well, I will
elements
say,
of.
I will say that at times it's good from our seats that you can't see some of that. I mean, it's fun, but
I'll tell you, there are times when the team is struggling in the fourth quarter and you're not in the mood.
No, you're right about that.
For the face mask singer, but you gotta do it anyway.
Should have been doing something besides singing. Yeah. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. We're wide open. Love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, 334-321-1390. That's The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Tech 7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And we'd love for you to join in. What are your thoughts? As we're just we're 9 days away from Auburn Baylor, what day is today? Is it Wednesday?
It's Wednesday the 20th.
Because Jason was in. So we're just 3 days away from college football. A couple of days away from college football.
Yeah, crazy to think. And keep in mind, Drew, hand me the we got the copy for the remote on Friday because
we are on the road at.
We're going on the Timber, right? We're going to Winter Timber Outdoors, the new store over by the mall. You check out brand new hunting and outdoor store on the line's going to be there as well. Giveaways, special guest appearances. We'll be talking week zero. We'll be talking high school football. So this Friday, we're on the road at Winter Timber Outdoors. That's going to be really exciting and crazy to think, Bill, that we are. I mean, we're ticking down the shows. Before it is
football season. When you got high school football getting underway. Georgia had high school football last week, so it's here. And obviously, the marquee game is the game in Dublin between Iowa State and K-State, both ranked teams. I mean, that is a ranked matchup between Iowa State and Kansas State. What time will it be in Dublin? It's an 11 o'clock kick.
Ooh.
Is that 11 o'clock? Yeah, 11 o'clock our time, right?
I'm thinking they're 6 or 7 hours ahead.
It's 7 probably.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably like...
Probably a 6 o'clock. That's not bad.
Yeah, I think they fine-tune it to where it can still be early enough to be shown at a reasonable hour across the United States. But no, you've got the game this week and then so many games next week. In the that loaded slate of college football.
There are a bunch of games on Thursday.
There are a bunch of games on Thursday, including Boise, South Florida.
Yeah,
I mean you've got a ranked team in action. You've got some. You have a conference game on in that action on Thursday in the Thursday slate. But you've got some. You've got some big stuff. Going on across, it's just no. You just got some teams in action, but then Nebraska Cincinnati is a really good game. Mm-hmm. You got some power conference teams squaring off, and then of course Auburn Baylor. We haven't talked about it. Georgia Tech Colorado is going to be the ESPN game going on during
right. That one starts at 7. Auburn starts at 6:30. Right
during Auburn Baylor.
No, Auburn 7 at 1.
Yeah, I mean so it's you've got a. I mean, college football is not easing into the season. We've had years past where it's like, it's not all that compelling.
Yeah, opening weekend.
Yeah, you don't really have a ton of compelling games week one. You're just happy to see all the teams. You're just happy to think like, oh, okay, you've got some, football is in the air, and that's enough. This week one is not. You're just happy to see football. You've got some really. I mean, including 1 versus 2. You've got some really compelling non-conference games up and down the slate Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, that's what is so fun and will be great to be able to just, watch game after game that should be entertaining. So really, really looking forward to it. We're getting closer to it. You know, if you're starting to feel like it, we'd love to get your thoughts. What do you think? I mean, Auburn and Baylor, it's moved to, last time I saw Auburn, about a two, even maybe a 2.5, but about a 2-point favorite.
Yeah, I think it's about two to three is the number. If you shop around, ESPN Bet has Auburn as 2.5 with a 57.5 over under as the you know, so expecting some points.
Oh, so make it like a 30-27 game.
Expecting.
I think if Auburn scores 30, they've won, and they probably covered fairly comfortably.
Right.
If they score 30.
Right. Although, you know, I think if Baylor, you know, I think if you told Baylor get to 27, I think they would feel.
Yeah, I think so. I think I don't feel so good if Baylor gets to 27. Yeah,
I think if you told Baylor get to 27, they would say we're probably going to win this football game. You know, it's challenge the Auburn offense to show you can finish four drives with touchdowns or cobble together enough points otherwise. But no, that's an interesting line because it seems to reflect some confidence in both of those offenses to put points on the board.
Yeah, and I was asked about this this morning on the on that the
if you had
Sanderson show.
If you had to guess right now, where would you be going over or under 57.5?
I'm going under.
I think I am too. Yeah,
I'm going under.
Offenses. I mean, just expecting offenses to be
right now. 9 days out, I sort of like Auburn getting to around that 30 mark.
I'm telling you, if Auburn's offense is sharp early, it's not good news for the rest of the teams on the schedule. No. Because this is the kind of offense.
I think this defense, first of all, is going to be really fun to watch. And I think that some of the concerns about the offense are because of the defense. Now, we'll find out. We'll definitely start finding out next Friday.
If Auburn was just if this Auburn situation was another team in the SEC, you know, we were able to be a little bit more objective about it. I would say two new tackles brought in from the transfer portal, Jackson Arnold, high-profile quarterback brought in from the portal, talented group of running backs replacing Jarquez Hunter, but one career start, you know, among the group at Auburn. That's the kind of offense that might need some time to find its identity.
Right.
And if this group is sharp opening night, it's you know, you wonder, you know, what's the, you know, sky's the limit, seemingly, for what they could do. You know, and it's not the end of the world if they're not sharp. You know, obviously, Jake made a good point yesterday that the difference between, sometimes you see a very different team in week three, week four.
Oh yeah, a lot of times
than you saw in week one. And Auburn's got some time. And again, that's not.
Remember 2010 with Cam? We're talking about the coaches not knowing what they had in Cam. It wasn't obvious in week one either.
And that, you know, the 2007 team, which is, you know, not a team that folks remember as fondly as some other Auburn seasons, but that team, remember, loses to South Florida and Mississippi State early. They're trying to figure out, is it Jason? Is it Cody? Is it Brandon? Is it Cody? And by the and a couple of weeks later, that team's in Gainesville beating Florida. That team is in Fayetteville beating Arkansas. That team is a second or two away from beating eventual national champion LSU.
Yeah,
like that team went from.
I was there. That one hurt.
Went from
a lot of them have there.
But think about it, because that team went from lost at sea early, trying to figure out what was going on to, and that happens a lot in college football. Mm-hmm. And the point is, and again, that's not to explain away a poor performance by the offense against Baylor, because I do think that there could be, you know, if it's not sharp, you are going to wonder why and how does it improve,
right?
But if it looks good against Baylor, if Auburn can flirt with 28 or more points, I think that's a sign that maybe this offense is in for really big things this year.
We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. You know, anything you want to talk about. It doesn't have to be specifically, you know, the Auburn Baylor matchup. Again, if you had some thoughts about the national titles being added, the word about you know, the branding on the field, you're gonna see Yellowwood. But I have no problem with anything, any of those little news items that that have come up here over the last couple of days.
You know, and I've said my piece about the 04 National Championship. Right. Like, I do sort of, like, do you feel still, and I may have asked this yesterday, like, any of the other championships they're adding, do you feel like there is, like, do you feel strongly about, oh, Auburn
shouldn't?
Should, yeah, I mean, it's and again,
no,
it's,
no,
and
no, no, I mean, the 83 team, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it was one that, like Jason said, it really feels like you're adding seven, because Auburn never really bragged about the other ones that they had just added in the media guide, because they were listed by the NCAA as national champs. That's what Auburn did with the other three. If you go, well, where did those come from? The NCAA lists national champions, and they list them when they are by, I guess not really approved, but recognized national either publications or services. So that's where the 83 team is one. I mean, their biggest problem was they were playing at the same time that Miami and Nebraska were playing, and that Miami-Nebraska game was a shootout. Yeah. And was a thrilling finish. So it allowed Miami to jump from 5-1, while Auburn at number 3 watched the numbers 1 and 2 teams fall and still couldn't move up to the top spot.
A more convoluted system for determining the national champion in college football back in, what, pre-99 as well,
yeah,
too, when you think about, like,
it
the
was just polls.
Yeah, the system of, I mean, they'll play the historic matchups in the bowl games, and then decide who, you know, the voters or the AP poll and the coaches poll will decide, and if you, yeah, you know, if you're one or the other, that was good enough to be the national champion. We didn't have a, you know, two teams selected for the national championship, or more than two teams selected for a college football playoff like we do now. But I think that especially for the significance, like for the acknowledgement for the players and coaches, like I love that, you know, Auburn is going to commemorate and recognize some teams, mm-hmm, in a way that they've never done it before, and educate, you know, maybe some fans, you know, and future fans who don't know about these Auburn teams from the past. You know, they can learn about some really important parts of the program's history.
Yeah, I think they're very deserving of that, and it'll make it fun for the fans too. That's something else that folks at the ball game will be able to enjoy when they do those. I guess they're going to do quite a bit of it in the opening game.
So I believe Mercer was the game for
the Mercer.
So
that's late.
Yeah, yeah. Jason. So because the Pat Dye 20th anniversary of the Hall of Fame reunion is scheduled for the Ball State game.
Okay.
The Cam Newton stuff is Georgia.
Bo Jackson is Alabama.
Bo's Alabama, and I believe the national championship reunions Mercer. Is Mercer. Yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Mitch, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in to the final half hour of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and let's get to the Drive hotline. And Mitch is up. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Got some comments about the natties and I guess some of these advertising things. But first thing, the 83 team, national champion. I know that they were recognized by the New York Times, and I think I researched, and one of Alabama's claimed titles was by the New York Times. So that one would definitely be one that would be legitimate.
There's no question about that one.
Yeah, but you were talking about the red zone. How about I got a couple here. Frank's Hot Sauce Red Zone or Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, Uncle Keith's Red Zone.
Yeah, there you go. So, and then with the national titles, maybe it was after the 2010 season, I wanted to make up some T-shirts and possibly, you know, sell them at the games. You know, I would have to be careful not to break any copyright laws, but
right.
But have something like, you know, just, you know, kind of like just do it, just claim them, and then have all the years like on the back of the shirt, but I'm glad they finally did. I mean, I went and read some articles on AL.com because I know you guys yesterday were saying that they claimed four, but they were mentioning seven in the articles.
Right. See, what had happened, like I said a little while ago, is Auburn just in the media guide added three that the NCAA lists on their website.
Okay.
So they had five in the media guide, but really, like Jason was saying, when you're in the stadium, you see national champions 1957 and 2010. You didn't see the other three listed. You didn't see, you know, 83 and 13 and what was the other one?
93, I believe.
Yeah, 93. Yeah, 1913 and then 83 and 93. That's interesting. They all ended in three, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, Auburn's got some weird things that go on when it comes to numbers.
Uh-huh.
But you know, if they're going to put up, like, placards or stuff around, you know, the stadium, maybe with a little history around the national championships, you know, maybe let the Auburn Fine Arts Department students maybe try to design some stuff, maybe get some scholarship money or something like that. Hmm.
Yeah,
that's a thought.
Yeah, I think you know whether they go with the students
or alumni or go to folks that would like their brand there doing mm-hmm. something
yeah.
too. I mean, it could be a way to make a little more money as well.
Well, yeah. Well, it's all about money. And then and speaking of that,
it's got to be if you want to get the players,
right,
and keep the players.
Well, right. You guys were saying, you know, you don't want the stadium or the field or the uniforms to look like NASCAR. Don't they have like these collapsible placards around, like, you know, soccer matches that have like all kinds of advertising on it?
Oh, sure. And you look, you know, you watch the look behind the batter, right? When the, you know, look at the backstop at a ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, they've got multiple. I mean, the opportunities are there to put advertisements virtually anywhere.
Well, there is, you know, endless possibilities, and there's a lot of smart people out there, a lot of creative people out there. So I'm sure they'll figure something out. And I've always said that Auburn's orange and blue colors, just the artwork you can create with those colors is just amazing. Like with the tiger eyes and some other things. So they'll figure something out. But is Justin Ferguson going to be on tomorrow?
I think we should have a Ferg appearance tomorrow, unless he's got a scheduling conflict. But I think he's able
Hopefully,
to go.
Yeah.
Next week we can't have Ferg on Thursday because
he's
going to be part of
traveling.
He's going to be part of the group traveling to Waco that day. But I think we should have Ferg in the house tomorrow. He was at the. He was the media opportunity yesterday, the viewing window and the player interviews.
Okay, great. Well,
he's at the Braves game right now.
Oh, I know you guys are going to be on location on Friday for that new outdoors place, and I haven't been to Auburn or down around the mall in years. But is there a Walmart now close to the mall on
yes.
Opelika Road?
Yes, there's a Walmart Marketplace.
Yeah, the Walmart grocery store.
Is
across from the.
It's in the old Kmart location.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Wow.
I figured that'd be the quickest way for
you right.
to understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I do remember the old Kmart. Yeah. Because I grew up there. So I was just when you said Walmart, I was like,
mm-hmm.
wow, there's a Walmart.
I mean, there's the Walmart on Pepperell, right? Right when you
right.
get into Opelika, that's
right.
still there.
Right.
But the Walmart, yeah, neighborhood market, that's right there, and that's very close to where we're going to be on Friday
yeah.
for Winter Timber Outdoors.
Okay. Now, speaking of the mall, and malls that are kind of gone downhill in
yes,
the last few decades, how is the Auburn Mall doing, or what's it even called now?
No, it's still the Auburn Mall.
Yeah,
they
still
got
Auburn
they got,
Mall.
You know, and they just want the Chick-fil-A inside the mall, and the Chick-fil-A right by the mall stay busy, mm-hmm. and they've got they put some new anchors in. Yeah, it's got, you know, I mean, indoor malls in general, you're right, are are sort of struggling.
They're not thriving the way they used to, but I think the Auburn Mall is still you know, hanging in there,
and still several shops you can.
I remember the old Village Mall jingle, Mitch. You remember it?
I'm a Santa Rosa Mall guy. Although Cordova was a good mall.
Oh yeah, Cordova.
Shout out to it all the time.
Yeah,
Cordova was a good one. I forget which of the anchors in the Auburn Mall, but I did pretty well during the move getting some kitchen supplies. You get some pots and pans and things like that. You can find some pretty good details. Find some pretty good deals at department stores.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, that's all I had. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, Mitch. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. And yes, indeed, we will be at Winter Timber Outdoors on Friday. I'm thinking it looks. Much more likely that I'm going to be able to be there. I was concerned a little bit on Monday because I thought last week after the surgery, I thought, oh man, this thing, second week, I'll be fine. It's not quite fine yet, but I'm telling you, physical therapy is helping a good bit, able to get around, and looking forward to being there on Friday.
Outstanding. Yeah, I want to see what the shop looks like. You know, really excited to see what the new store, and hopefully the coach can join us on location on a Friday as well, but looking forward to our trip to Winter Timber Outdoors on Friday. Did want to mention again, because they're our pals, Skybar 20th anniversary. They're having that party tomorrow night.
Oh, okay, good.
250 the first 250 through the door get the free t-shirts. The commemorative 20th anniversary, not the 200th anniversary, the commemorative I doubt
you'll be promoing that.
We'll be there for that one.
Maybe you can go ahead and cut it early.
It'll be fun, yeah. Oh, that'd be all right. All right, so guys, coming up in the year 20,
that'd be 180 years from now.
Okay, so real quick,
at 180,
2205.
In the year 2205.
Skybar, 200th anniversary. No, so
God, if we're still alive.
It's fantastic. The 21st, Skybar's having the 20th anniversary party. First 250 through the door get free 20th anniversary t-shirts, and they'll be going all night. The whole place will be open. I believe it's all systems go the rest of the week with students going out.
Sense.
And I think the front, the back, the whole thing's the whole thing's open, big shout out to our congratulations to our friends at Skybar, an institution in downtown Auburn after 20 years.
All right, I was thinking about something when Mitch
not
was,
the institution we need to be in.
No. Right? No. Well, quite a few people have said I should be institutionalized over the years. I was thinking when Mitch was where we're talking about national championships. I'm trying to remember. Was it may have been AP. Back in years ago, when Alabama won the national title in 1964, the Associated Press named its national champion before the bowl game.
Pre-bowls. When did that stop? Was that something
they stopped that year?
Okay.
That year, because Alabama lost its bowl game.
Yep.
And there was a big outcry that the bowl game should count. So the next year, so AP said, we're going to name the national champion after the bowl game. 65. Alabama goes into the bowl game number 3. They win, 1 and 2 lose. Alabama wins the national championship in 65. So they were the reason it changed,
and then benefit,
and benefited in both of those.
Right, and it felt for a long time with the BCS like most of the years the NCAA was able to dodge those bullets, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like
they were extremely fortunate.
Extreme, and sometimes you know they needed a 4-game parlay to go their way to avoid a traffic jam, and they would hit it on the last weekend of the season. That's 2001,
yeah.
Right? Like, isn't that like? Aren't there like 3 or 4 teams that have a chance to make it extremely messy? Not all 3 undefeated messy,
no.
But messy. 2004 was the first time you had the problem of, hey,
you had 4 unbeaten teams.
You had 4 unbeaten teams, including Utah, who was not one of the major conference teams, but destroyed.
Was that an Urban Utah?
That was Urban's last Utah team. That had the number 1 overall pick, Alex Smith, playing quarterback.
That is right.
So I mean, you had 4 undefeated teams. 3 of them from major conferences. You had to pick 2 of them for the championship game.
And the thing is, it was obvious what was going to happen because USC and Oklahoma had been 1-2 all year, from the preseason all the way through.
Yes, Auburn came out of nowhere compared to USC and Oklahoma that year, because those two teams had been, Oklahoma had lost the national championship game the year before. USC had been left out of the national championship game the year before, but they were the number one team in the country in the AP poll, and then when they won their bowl game, they stayed number one in the AP poll.
So they shared the
and claimed the AP title the year before. So you had the team that lost the national championship game and the team that shared the national championship as your 1-2 in 2004. They neither of them lose a game. I think people forget, this is something Jake said yesterday. The idea that everyone knew Oklahoma was toast going into the USC game. No. Like, I think you can play the result and say, okay,
that you should have known.
Someone else maybe could have given USC a close.
Everybody thought that was going to be a great.
I believe. Game. I mean, Oklahoma was favored the week of the game. I think at kickoff, USC's a 1-point or 2-point favorite, but it was a pick 'em. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma had played a lot of one-sided football games that season, I think it was up in the air going into that game who actually was the best team. USC dismantles them in the game itself, and then it becomes a little bit easier to say, oh, Auburn should have been in that game instead of Oklahoma. But no, I think that, you know, if that exposed the inherent unfairness of a system where you have the possibility that three or four teams could win every game on their schedule, and then you got to have a beauty pageant. You know, you got to find a way to pick two of them without letting them settle it on the field. And it's an important season, not just for Auburn. That's an important season for college football history, right? Because I think it forced
the four team.
I think it forced the issue. Like it forced. Hey, like this is a, and you always wondered, like, are you going to have in the four team playoff?
Five.
Oh, are there going to be? It never happened, but it was like, oh, we're going to have five undefeated conference champions and someone getting left.
No, it got to the point, it seemed like in the four-team playoff, there'd be maybe three. But, I mean, it usually felt like you knew who the two better teams were.
And honestly, now we've overcorrected to the point where you could probably crown a college football national champion by just taking the four winners of the conference championship games from the four major conferences and letting them play a four-team playoff.
There's not enough money in that, and every conference. The SEC and the Big Ten feel like our second place team's good enough to win this thing.
So we need 28
or third place, right? Fourth place.
Yeah, so let's push it to
28. That's ridiculous.
24, 28
teams. No, that's insane.
Have
we talked about that?
We have not talked about that proposal on there. You know, I agree with you, except if the concession for getting rid of conference championship games is that you got to expand the playoff to 16 or
16
or,
fine. Or I'm okay with 16.
I think 24 would be the next step.
Would be 24, and you'd have 8 first round byes.
Yeah,
I don't know. I sort of hope not, but I wouldn't be shocked.
No, I mean, I guess it's like college football hipsterism, where it's like, you know, I kind of think a smaller playoff might be the idea now, but there you're right. That'll get you beaten with hammers at the CSC if you try to propose it. You're thrown out the window.
It's like, sure, as long as you don't care about money at all, revenue doesn't matter.
It'll be your last day pitching ideas to the CSC.
Right. All right, we've got to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Wednesday Drive.
I am Eddie Smith, and I am running to be your next mayor. Serving
at 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of the Wednesday Drive with Bill and Dan. Again, our thanks to Jason Caldwell being with us in hour number one. Jason, of course, from Auburn Undercover, with us in the first hour today. If you missed any of Jason or the show or any of the shows, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the Podcast Center, or go to the or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, Really appreciate folks who check out the show on the podcast. And they also sponsor our text box, 334-564-1840.
Yeah, we were, as we went to break, we were talking about the story that came out a couple of days ago, it's been, that the Big Ten was sort of floating ideas of expanding the playoffs to 24 or 28 teams. And as you were saying, eliminating conference championship games. I don't have a problem with eliminating conference championship games, but that seems like an awful lot. I would guess you'd have to have, eight teams getting first-round byes to get you to 16 after one, and then going from there. The thing I absolutely didn't like about it was the Big Ten was saying their proposal was that there would be no on-campus games. And that's crazy. To me, that was one of the best things about expanding to the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, I think you push it to where, like, at a certain point in the playoff, I think moving it to the NFL stadiums makes it feel like you're into the
Elite Eight or the Final Four of it or whatever.
When there's a handful of teams left, you know, moving it to NFL stadiums gives it, an extra bit of panache. But I think they're also, like, there's something really I mean, that was the only part of the expanded playoff this year that I thought was a success.
Yeah, I agree.
Like the games themselves, until we got to what, four? Like, the games themselves were lackluster. Yeah. A lot of those teams didn't really look like they were in their element. But the fact they were playing at home was really cool, and that's something that I would hope they take away from this. I mean, that was something I hope they keep. And, you know, one of the takeaways from this past year was that, like, that was a success. So I'm right there with you, Bill.
All right, we are out of time here on a fun edition of The Drive here on this Wednesday. Yeah, hopefully Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joins us tomorrow. We'd love for you to as well, but we're done for the day. So have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.